Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Disruptive Business, celebrating those who change the game.
Disruptive Business features cutting-edge organizations and the innovative leaders who guide them. Today's show is brought to you by Minerva Planning Group. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Micah Porter.
And something's wrong with my headphones today, Micah.
Is it starting off that badly?
Yes.
This does not bode well.
I know. You would think it was Monday instead of Friday.
I'm sure it's Monday somewhere in the world.
You know what? It's got to be. So how are you doing today, sir?
Doing just fine. Doing just fine. I'm glad we escaped yet another winter storm. I wasn't sure if we needed to stock up on bread and eggs last night.
I know. You know what? I love Atlanta, and we have two guests in the studio who I don't want to ignore, so you guys feel free to chime in on this, too. But
We're not used to being ignored.
Gary and Prince are here, and we're going to give their full introductions in a second. But, you know, I was watching the local news last night, which is something that I never do, and we are completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
We had like 10 or 12 minutes, literally, of storm coverage with all these special banners across the thing. One of the reports literally was tree down.
Huh?
Tree. One tree.
Was there man on scene, or did they just?
Yes.
Nice.
There was a man on the scene with one tree down on a non icy, non snowy road and storm. I mean, come on. And you wake up this morning, it's like sunny, and you're like, really?
It's
just embarrassing. I mean, literally, if they took that the news or put it on a TV show in the Northeast, they would never stop laughing at us.
Now you're beginning to work your way into our inferiority complex here in the South. So, you know, I think we should steer it away or we're going to offend listeners.
Oh, my God. It's like if we wanted to be more ridiculous, we couldn't. We couldn't.
That's probably true.
But that's the beauty of Atlanta, right? We get such mild weather. I mean, there are no extremes one way or the other, and life goes on, right?
You know what? The show that we're doing, obviously, right now is called Disruptive Business. And, you know, we get guys in here like you two that, you know, have these amazing businesses that are disrupting the marketplace and doing all kinds of great things. And the first thing I bring up is local news, which, of course, is going right down the toilet. Why? Because they do 12 minutes of coverage on a tree down.
But it was disruptive. So it went specifically geared towards this show today. It was all planned.
Gary, yeah. thanks for helping us justify that 3 or 4 minutes.
You're welcome. This was a word from your local sponsor.
That's right. And Micah, why don't you officially introduce our guests?
I would be happy to do so. Our first guest is Prince Nair, and he is with Comdex Consulting. Comdex works with public safety communications and consults on the network setup configuration for those public safety agencies. And our other guest is Gary Gross, and Gary's with Mercury Development. They do mobile application development, but my understanding is you also do development for desktop platforms as well. Is that right?
Correct. Windows and cloud development as well. So we've been around for about 13 years,
okay.
A little over 13 years now, and started out doing, believe it or not, mobile apps for the old U.S. Robotics Palm Pilot. Now, everybody, if you're not driving, raise your hand if you've ever heard of a U.S. Robotics Palm Pilot. Two, do you know what it is and if you've ever had one? Remember the old stylus with it?
Yeah.
Yep, and the little chiclet buttons.
Exactly.
I used to have one of those, believe it or not.
Well, Prince and I are showing our age because we actually know about those things.
I had one of those. It was cool. You got to start somewhere.
Well, and you know what? It did. We started our business back in 1999. We did that, but quickly found out that we couldn't form an entire business around just that particular product. So that's why we went into Windows development, and we're a Microsoft Gold partner, and we're also an Apple Premier partner. And for a couple of years, we did development work in addition to the robotics things. But then we did something that we took a big leap of faith. And you know what they always say about that? The worst strategy is to jump a chasm in two leaps.
Yeah,
so we actually took a big leap, and we paid all of our developers in 2001 to learn everything they could about Apple's new platform that was coming out, which was the OS X. So we spent 6 years doing all sorts of work on that OS X platform.
I was worried you were going to say you did all this work on the Newton, which probably didn't work out real well for you. But
that was another one of those probably bad strategies for some folks. But we were fortunate that the Apple strategy paid out for a lot of people because perfect storm for us, 2007, the iPhone comes out, built primarily on the OS X platform, and we'd already had 6 years of development work on that. So we became very busy very quickly.
Yeah, to add to Gary's point, I think the timing in business is very critical. I mean, from that standpoint, I still remember when I started out back in 2000. It was December 2000. I was working for a company. I was their director of operations at that time. And what I was really frustrated about was that there was all these disparate communication systems. And Gary, you can appreciate that being a first responder.
That volunteer first responder.
Volunteer, sorry.
Yeah. So in other words, let me just clarify this, friend. I don't get paid to run into. I get paid nothing to stand away but just help direct traffic and things like that. But and rescue people if need be. But no, they don't. I tell you what, not to steal your thunder, my friend, but volunteer and paid first responders, they're the ones that should be getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely.
These are the people that run into a fire, run into bullets, run into things, and then we give them all sorts of grief and they don't get paid enough. It always fails. It just always amazes me that these people are not paid tons of money.
I agree with you. They're risking their lives. I completely agree. And that was the frustrating part, was that the communication systems that these guys go into those burning buildings with, I mean, they were not interoperable. And what does interoperable mean? So let's say, God forbid, if there's a major disaster here in Atlanta or something of that sort, I mean, you need more than a city's police officers and first responders to be able to respond to that. And the way the systems were designed and still are being designed to some extent today as well, they were disparate. They could talk very well amongst themselves, but not across each other. So in essence, they were islands of communications. And that is frustrating. Why can't we do something better?
So do you mean like if two different fire departments respond to a really big incident that they cannot talk to each other?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. I'll give you an incident here, very popular incident here in a second. So that was the idea with which I started Comdex. And actually, it's funny. I came home and told my wife, I said, I think I'm going to quit my job. And
those conversations usually always go real well.
I know. And here's the part that was really bad was that at that time, she had just become pregnant with her first child. The economy had just gone into recession.
Nice.
And but supportive person that she is, she says, I know this is your dream. You want to do it? Go ahead and do it. And with that, I took the leap of faith and started Comdex.
Are you still together?
We are.
Okay,
we
good.
Are.
So,
we
visitation absolutely. every other
and to
Friday.
To me, I always say that this is the second best decision I ever made in my life, starting Comdex. And people ask me, what is the first best decision? It was marrying my wife. Because if I hadn't done that, I don't think Comdex would have started.
And she's listening to today's show, so good answer.
But anyhow, 9 months after I started Comdex, 911 happened. And if you look at 911, what happened was you had NYPD responding and New York Fire Department responding.
Right.
NYPD from the helicopters could see that this building is going to collapse. But at the same time, the fire department was telling everybody, go up and rescue people.
Oh, yeah.
If they were able to talk to each other, the hundreds of police officers and actually the firemen who lost their lives would not have happened. We could have saved so many lives. If you look at the 911 Commission's report, the number one reason why people lost lives was because of lack of communication, lack of interoperability. Well, that was the number one
Let's
finding.
Put this also in today's perspective, Prince, because just recently, as a volunteer first responder through a national program called CERT, Community Emergency Response Team, which is through Homeland Security and administered through FEMA, I've done that for a number of years. We just recently had a major multi-municipality drill about a major disaster, and we had similar events happen where our walkie-talkies or communication devices were failing at various times. So here we are, 12 years later, and we're still running into some of the same situations.
Absolutely, and that's when I'm going to talk about Sandy Springs. I mean, just, 2-3 weeks ago, we kind of were, Sandy Springs asked us to consult with them for the communication system that they want to buy, but instead of buying it by themselves, what they have done is formed alliance with other cities as well, so that it's a joint communication system with cities like Roswell, Alpharetta, and everybody else joining in to make it a truly interoperable communication system, which is the need of today. So I think, to your point, I mean, that islands of interoperability still exist in today's, but it's getting better. There is more focus. Here's the worst part is this technology is very cost-effective technologies that are available today that help you bridge those islands. And there's a lot of jurisdictions that still continue to operate the old way. So,
do you interact with ChatCom?
Yes. Yes.
That's fantastic.
That's one of the locations that will be touched by this new communication system that they just bought.
Now, for those of us that aren't responders in any way.
Yeah, bring it down to our level.
ChatCom. What is ChatCom?
ChatCom is it's a command center that is used by in the North Fulton area for any emergency operations response and all that. So typically when first responders respond to emergencies, mm-hmm. I mean, there are people in the field that need to talk to each other with walkie-talkies and all that. But at the same time, they need to communicate back to their command center, the 911 dispatch center and all that. Mm. So that's one of the command centers is ChatCom is the command center up in North Fulton.
So the other thing is it's very interesting from a technological standpoint to take a tour of one of those facilities. It doesn't happen very often because you typically don't know where that location is. It's specifically not
right.
No signage. You're not going to know that, oh, this is the 911 center. So you can drive by it every day and you'll never know that it's there. And we're escorted all over the place, and you're watching the 911 operators go through this, and you realize the stress level that they're trained to handle. They, again, are another group that need to have a ton of kudos because you listen to some of these events that happen, and you hear the recordings, and you hear how calm and professional the 911 operators are, where you and I would probably be screaming like 13-year-old schoolgirls at a concert or something, because I don't understand how they can be trained to do that so well.
Well, going to the technology. So when I think of first responders and the systems that they use, I tend to think of walkie-talkies. But I know that Comdex works with Sonnet. You work with fixed wireless. You work with any number of communications technologies. Do those come into play for public safety networks? And if so, how?
That's the beauty of it, right? I mean, in the age that we live in, where ordinary people have a phone that's capable of doing so many things, the first responders still today carry those walkie-talkies mm-hmm. because, I mean, the technology is still mired in what it was 20 years ago. So with that, kind of what we are doing is bringing the LTE, the 4G technology, right. to the first responders so that they can have a rich user interface, a rich experience that everybody, I mean, other outside of public safety community is used to today.
You know, it's one of the funny things, you know, you talk about kind of getting stuck in a technology, and I watch the, you know, you watch the news and you see the correspondents in another country, you know, talking to CNN or whatever, whichever channel you like. And it's the same thing because you hear that delay and yeah. you're like, if I was on a cell phone, I'd be talking to this person. I can talk to them in Skype and have no delay. So why do these news channels that have all this money and technology have this delay because they're using technology that has come for 20 years, you know? Obviously, it's different, but in the same idea that, like, the whole first responder system, they have these systems in place. That's how they're trained. That's what they're used to. That's the companies they're used to dealing with. So you have to break through all that to get your newer stuff in there.
And budgets are a problem, too, with first responders lately.
Well, I mean, that's the unfortunate part is, like, the public safety communities today spend millions of dollars on these radio systems that are antiquated,
yeah.
right? In upgrading them to what is, I would say, still, even when they upgraded, it's still 20 years from
where
normal people are.
Right.
So that, I mean, like, I'll give you an example. We talked about ChatCom, right? I mean, people today, especially young people, when they see an emergency, they don't want to call. They want to send a text. They want to share a picture.
Really?
They want to send a video, right? And are our dispatch centers equipped to handle that? No, they really are not. I mean, if somebody's called, is sent a text to 911, where would it go? Nowhere. That's where there's a technology called NG911, which is next generation 911, which allows you to be able to receive that and be able to talk in the language that the user is comfortable with. If they want to share pictures, that's okay. I mean, can you imagine if you have a picture or a video of this incident and seeing that the way it's happened or it's happening right now, and be able to share with the first responder? Those are the technologies of the future that exist today that I think public safety community needs to adopt, and that's awareness we're bringing.
That's the texting. I immediately like went right to the horror movie scenario. Like you're hiding behind your couch, and there's like a bad guy in your house. The last thing you want to do is talk on the phone.
I don't want to use
text.
Don't use a method of communications where you can send an emoticon. to communicate an emergency. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
but yeah, but if you're behind the couch crouching down, you don't want to be like, hey, 911, there's a guy in the house. You want to text that because you don't have to make any noise.
Right. And there's a lot of scenarios and cases where that has occurred. One of the areas that where Prince and I actually interact in that from a custom mobile app development standpoint, we work with municipalities and corporations in developing an application that allows all of the information for like a company. It could be a business continuity or a disaster recovery scenario so that everything is within that app. So in an unfortunate incident or an event, as we like to call them, something occurs. Are you going to run over to you, if you're the CEO of a company, are you going to run over to your desk and grab that disaster recovery folder, that big three-ring binder or the business continuity thing? You're getting the heck out of there. If there's a fire or a tornado, you don't care about this stuff. But what happens if you've got all sorts of information and the first responders come in, they are trying to communicate, this building is still here, that office is still there, and all of a sudden you're listening and you go like, our business is gone. What do we do? So companies like ourselves, Mercury Development, we can work with a corporation and with the communications companies and then develop an application so that all of the employees or the stakeholders can have it right there on their mobile device and they can bring down, they know exactly what they need to do,
what
where
the
they need
plan
to go.
Is when
and that's
and,
the key.
And how to get a hold of everybody. The big key just in communication is we talk about audio and visual communication and as Dana was talking about texting. Well, if you've got disparate employees all over the place and they don't know that something has occurred at, let's say, corporate or regional office, and you've got to continue things, within your app you can have your entire database of all your employees, how to get a hold of them for every given moment, and it can send out an alert to let them know what now their responsibilities are. So this is how, when we work with communications companies, this is a prime example of just one aspect of custom mobile app development.
That's right. And that's where, kind of like Gary said, what first responders need is a communication system that enables that. Because, I mean, right now, the communication systems that they have only allow 19.2 kilobytes per second. That's slower than, remember
dial
those
up
modems?
Yeah.
It's slower than the 56 kbps modems that we used to have back then. So you can't have a rich user experience with that kind of a network. So what we are doing is, along with the apps and all that, bringing that network that allows them 3, 4, 5 megabytes per second LTE network. But then what it does, it allows a first responder, when they're responding to a scene, I mean, let's say they're going to a burning building, they can pull down what are the building plans,
the schematics,
building plans office, and see, okay, when we go in, where do we need to turn, where the person captured or not, to have that real time. Can you imagine if the first responder had those tools at this fingerprint, how effective can he be? Or if you're going in a situation where there is kind of, I mean, somebody hostage situation, something of that sort, right? If you can have video sharing amongst the first responders, they can see where all their colleagues are placed along the scene and be able to see the video of what's actually happening in the scene, and the people back in the command center, they can direct people, okay, based on what they are seeing on the ground from the helicopter and all that, and be able to direct effectively. And those are the technologies I think this new next generation of technologies is going to.
Well, you mentioned LTE, and you know the famous Verizon wireless ad. Can you hear me now?
That's right.
Well, an event, I think you called it, Gary. Okay, an event happens somewhere where there is poor coverage, which I know is inconceivable in this country. Do you bring in your own LTE system that the first responders can use? Is that how that works?
Absolutely.
There's a SAT uplink or something like that?
There is three forms of that.
Okay.
One is you can put in what is called a DAS, which is distributed antenna systems, in your critical buildings where you know you have problems. You can go in and wire those buildings so you know in a basement or an elevator there is problems in coverage and all this. You can set those DAS systems in there so that you already are. So let's say you go in a building that where there isn't that problem, is then you can have what is called a vehicular repeaters. So you can set them up. I'm sure, Gary, you're familiar with those whereby you can. Now you all of a sudden what you've done is you've amplified the signal in that particular building, and now your people, when even when they go inside the building, they can talk there as well. So there is a lot of different ways to, or there's a third way, let's say there isn't anything, you can set up what is called a site on wheels.
Okay.
So you just mobilize that to the site, and all of a sudden that whole entire, let's say, if it's a widespread problem, that entire 5 mile radius surrounding that particular area becomes an LTE site by itself. So there is a lot of different ways where you can address this coverage problems on a situation by situation basis.
So you talk about the first responders and they go into an area. One of the drills we actually just recently did was up in Sandy Springs at the government facility area. And it's multiple buildings, multiple structures spread out over a period of area. And you don't always know, if you're just coming in, you can't memorize every single thing about every single building. So if we work with a community, a city, a municipality, and we get blueprints, and we actually put diagrams of each of those facilities that, as Prince mentioned earlier, you could, the first responder or volunteers can bring that up, and we can say, okay, great. Here's a fire hydrant here. Here's where we need to turn water off there. Here's where we need to turn gas off here. We can go and do that. Or as we've run search and rescue programs, where is the most critical areas? Like, for instance, we did a drill the other day where there was a lost child. Well, we didn't necessarily know that behind this one building there was a creek and a forest because we weren't familiar with it. But if that was built into the app from the municipality, the innocent commander could look at that and say, all right, here's where we want you, search and rescue, to attack first, because we know that that's a very dangerous area. Maybe the child slipped and fell in the creek or something of that nature, which is exactly, as the drill panned out, what had happened. So it's those aspects where we work in conjunction with a municipality or a corporation that we can build an app around that to their custom design and make it so that it affects how Prince and his company work, but also how the community can be involved as well.
Well, you talk about the – essentially what you're talking about is connected information. You know,
correct.
And going back to the idea of some sort of incident that happened, my first job out of school, I've got a wealth management firm now, but I initially started working in the recording industry, and I worked on the 42nd floor of a building in Times Square. And it was my first day there. And it was probably 2 in the afternoon. And the fire alarm started going off, and I thought, well, you know, great, my first day they're doing a fire drill. It wasn't a drill. There was some construction being done in the building, and rumor has it that they decided to bring in a crew that wasn't blessed by the local union, and somehow a fire started. And somehow the fire doors were propped open. So when we figured out it wasn't a drill, we're on the 42nd floor, we're beginning to see fire trucks surrounding Times Square. We head to the fire exits. Well, we get in the stairwell, and they're filled with smoke. There was no communication. There was nothing going on, but there was nothing that you would hear but a fire alarm. Well, finally, we had the good sense to get out of the fire, the stairwell. And fortunately, there was a party going on the 38th floor where we stopped, and I was able to prop myself in front of an air filter and grab a beer.
Multitasking. What a great concept.
I figured I was going to relax for a bit. But it took the firemen about 35 minutes to work their way up to the building and come into that and tell us what was going on. And I wasn't particularly scared because I just was, but there were people around me that were just panicking.
Now, let's put that in perspective. As scary as that is, you're an intelligent person, obviously well-educated. Did you ever read any of those notifications on any floor that says, you are here, here's your evacuation route? Has anybody ever read those?
No.
No.
Never.
Never.
They're all posted there because legally they have to be. If you get in that same situation, are you going to actually stop and go like, okay, I'm here, I got to go down here, take a right? No, of course not. But
you're going to follow everybody else and run like crazy.
And sometimes that's the worst thing in the world, is to follow everybody
else.
So imagine then if that company or that building, the people that own that building, we develop an app for them that had all of that information on there, and you made it mandatory that everybody that works in that building has this automatically on their app. And should something come up, they bring that up right away. You are here, and it shows them exactly where the areas are, and go from there.
It points out where you can get a beer while you're waiting on
exactly.
The fire.
While you're waiting in front of that.
That has to be one of the key features, right?
and that can be set up through the building ownership.
But actually, that makes me think of a question for you, Prince, because one of the things that is lacking, I think, sometimes is not just the communication between, let's say, two fire departments or fire and police or whatever, but also to the public, whether it's just the building manager or, you know, who can get in touch with everybody in the building and say, you know, hey, this is real. This is not a drill, or it's real. The incident's on the 32nd floor. If you're below that, you need to do this. If you're above it, you need to do that. Is that also part of your technology, or will it be? Or,
well, I mean, ours is our company itself is focused more on the public safety needs. So
okay.
I mean, so that's not part of our technology. But one of the things that kind of runs parallel to that is FirstNet, which is kind of, if you look at it, you talked about Verizon's 4G LTE system.
Right.
The government, what it has done is last year they allocated $7 billion to build a Verizon-like LTE network specifically for first responders. So kind of think of Verizon LTE network, but more for first responders. So now what Gary was talking about, the ecosystem of apps and all that, now all of a sudden that ecosystem evolves whereby now things like what you're talking about are now possible, whereby kind of you can develop apps that allow people, general public, to have access to that information that only first responders typically have. So I think that's that ecosystem of public safety apps and all that is going to evolve over the years. I mean, I had a breakfast with Lieutenant Governor last month, and one of the things he asked us is, hey, you guys are the leaders in public safety and all that, so why don't you organize kind of in awareness? Because even in Georgia, even though that the initiative is going on a nationwide basis to build that public safety network, there isn't awareness among public safety that, hey, this is coming and we need to express what our needs are and this educational session. So in May at the Gwinnett Center, we had putting together a public safety technologies, kind of talk about disruptive technologies. So bring
right.
vendors like what Gary, you talked about, kind of those who have apps, those who have equipment, those who have technologies together and bring all the first responders from across the state of Georgia and then have that awareness session that, hey, these are the technologies, these are the apps that are available for you to use your job effectively. So I think that will be a good learning and for all the first responders across.
And it really should be. I mean, just look here in the Atlanta metro area. We've got all these high-rises, tons of high-rises, midtown, downtown, even up at the perimeter areas. You've got tens of thousands of people that work in these buildings. Going back to the previous scenario, the first responders or the volunteers that are maybe doing and going involved as a search and rescue. How many times have we gone into a building that we've never been into and you're just like, okay, I think it goes around to the left and I'm not sure where it goes. But imagine if you had that information, pull up, what offices were there, who's that, how many employees are there. And then as people come out, because this is also part of the drill and the first responding thing is you always go to a specific area. That's part of the training as you egress. And there's headcounts. If you're missing people, we need to go back up and go into that office. But if just to say, well, it's on the 15th floor, I don't know where that is on the 15th floor. So I can look on my app. And those are the types of things, well, we get in conversations with corporations or an owner of a building. These are things that intuitively they should be doing, but they're not. And so that's part of the – you talk about disruptive business.
Right.
It's disruptive business – as soon as that fire alarm is pulled.
Well, and I think the businesses, the building owners, the management, you don't think about these things because they're not supposed to happen. You know, they're tail events from a statistical perspective. So you don't have time to spend. You don't have all the time that you want to spend on the probable events. So you're not looking at the improbable.
Well, I mean, to your point, Mike, I mean, one of the things, I mean, from building management perspective, which is becoming a critical need, is especially in the top large buildings and all the way, there is the frequency of incidents is more often. I mean, typically all the major buildings have some kind of a video surveillance system. But yet, when a first responder shows up on the scene, there's no way for him to have access to that video feed regarding what's happening inside the building. So there's a new concept called video interoperability coming in, whereby all these major buildings have to register their video systems and make it interoperable with the command center. So when there is an emergency from that particular area, then they can immediately turn on that feed and be able to view inside the building and say, okay, what's going on inside the building? To that end, I mean, we're doing some pilots and, along that. But another one I talk about from the video standpoint, we are partnered with Lockheed Martin. And we're doing a pilot along the southern border. We did finish, actually, that, and now it's kind of along the entire southern border. There is all these, I mean, people who are intrusions happening across the border. But you can't put enough eyes on the border to be able to catch each and every one of them. That's where technology comes in. It's like with the cameras that we have deployed along the border, you can monitor activity across a 5-mile wide path, and you don't have anybody sitting, right? Whenever there is an intrusion from across the border, the camera sitting 5 miles away is stable enough that it can pick up that intrusion has occurred, number one. Number two, it can pick up whether it's a person or whether it's an animal moving. And if it's a person, it can detect, okay, whether it's a male or a female. So that kind of technology is available today between the sensors, the radars, and the videos to be able to detect that. So you don't have to have 50 Border Patrol agents along the border putting their lives at risk when technology, then you know, okay, now people are sitting there and say, okay, that's where the intrusion is happening right now. Go there and do it. And we did that for Department of Homeland Security. They liked it so much. It has become a national program now, and we should hear about that in the next month or two. So.
Did you happen to do any work with FLIR systems as you did?
That's right. There you go.
We talked about that.
We had Bard in a few weeks back.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he was on the show.
Their CEO is a good friend of mine.
Oh, okay. Well, very good.
It's a small world.
It is. That's right.
Here in the disruptive business sector.
Well, and I know we've talked a good bit about telecommunications and communication infrastructure. And, Gary, I know that obviously your company works in that space, but are there other spaces that you work in that you'd just like to briefly mention?
Sure. The interesting thing about when you do custom native mobile apps, it's a very unique skill set. Some of the newer technologies are hybrid and HTML5 and so forth, and you hear about the people that they're – nephew's friend, sister live in the basement is doing HTML5 apps. And that's great. It's fantastic. We need those. But typically, since we deal with primarily B2B, mid-market and enterprise corporations, they typically need what's done natively, which are much more complex. They utilize all the accessories of your mobile device. And it's a little bit harder thing to do. But we'll work in all the different sectors. We're very big in, obviously, the business sectors. We do manufacturing, supply chain, entertainment, healthcare, financial, a little bit of all those. And we work off of all the platforms, meaning that we'll do work with the iOS, which is the iPhone and iPad, the Windows phone, and, of course, all the Android. And Android is very fragmented. There's lots of different operating systems within Android. But believe it or not, Android owns the lion's share of the mobile device marketplace. But yet, believe it or not, more apps are being done for iOS. So it's kind of an upside-down scenario, primarily because of the fragmentation in Android. So we work with all of that, and we work with our clients on an individual basis to help them through that process of what is it that you really need to do? What do you want to do?
When you have a B2B situation, so they're developing an app that they're going to for lack of a better term, force all of their employees to use, right? So they have a built-in, like, this is going to help our business, so everybody's going to have it. Do they have to automatically then do it on both platforms, all three platforms, to make sure that they can have all their employees adopt it, or how does that work?
Great question, because we're in what we call BYOD, bring your own device.
Yep.
It's hugely, you talk about disruptive business, that's huge. And for those that don't know what that means is you have a corporation of 5,000 employees. You probably have 5,000 different devices that people bring.
Which drives the CTOs crazy.
It does. And in fact, here in Atlanta, we have the Technology Association of Georgia. And on the Mobility Society, I'm on the governing board. And we just had an event the other day. And our panelists, we asked our panelists, how many different devices do they carry with them at any given time? One guy said 8, one said 4, one said 3, and so forth. So look at me today here in the studio. I've got a minimum of 2. It's just the nature of it. So to your question, if in fact they do have all the different BYOD, bring your own devices, a lot of times we'll make it available in the early stage so that it can be deployed on iOS, Android, Windows, and some other things that are already in the works coming down the line. But a company may just say, well, we're going to start with iOS now, and 3 months from now, 6 months from now, we'll deploy to Android and so forth. But it makes it for very interesting conversations.
Yeah, I know. I worked at a company at one point where – and it wasn't even – we didn't have any custom apps. This was a little bit before that was happening so wide in such a widespread fashion. But, you know, most of the people on the team had – iPhones, and I have an Android phone, and so there were certain things that they had that they were using, and they were like, well, we should all use this. And I was like, well, yeah, no, I can't do that. Sorry.
Here's a prime example. We were speaking with a corporation. Their corporate policy said that they wanted it built on iOS. All of their sales team, over 100 people, were on Android. Talk about a disconnect on communication.
Yeah, and then you say to your boss, well, you're going to have to get me an iPhone, and your boss says no, and then you're like, okay, how do I do my job?
So it makes for an interesting – those are some things that we hope to overcome, but sometimes the in-house political aspects we can't. So what we do is we build – because we're strictly custom, we build in so that it can be done on iOS and also deployed on Android at the same time, even though probably nobody's really using the iOS standpoint except maybe upper management because of the ones that dictated that.
One of the disruptive technologies, and Gary, you may be familiar with it, is called Row Mobile. What that does is, so basically you develop an app only once, and then it just goes in, it just adapts the app based on whether it goes needs to go on iOS, Android. So whenever you're making updates and all that, you just need to make updates once, and then it translates that into all three versions. So that way, kind of the problem you were telling, kind of you don't have to have that problem of. So it's kind of there's a lot of middleware that's being created whereby, it can solve those challenges between different technologies and all that.
Go ahead.
Does that program operate as a compiler, or does it operate as a virtual machine?
It's basically a development platform.
Okay, gotcha.
So kind of like you're developing in iOS, you develop in Row Mobile, and then you tell, okay, I want it in Android, iOS, and all that, and you just
it compiles natively.
It just takes the code and adapts.
You know, it's funny because there's a large company whose name I will not mention that has apps. I have their app on my Android and I also have it on my iPad. And of course they also have a website. And I was just saying the other day, so of course there's the whole thing about having it on the different kinds of phones, smartphones, right? But then there's all the different sizes now of tools that you can use. And I was noting that this particular large company, the interface is so completely different on my phone versus my iPad versus the web that it's frustrating because I want the same experience or as close to as possible the same experience on all three.
That's and right. We hear that all the time. That's called the UI, the right. User interface.
Absolutely.
Or the UX, the user experience.
Yep.
And those are the types of questions that we'll ask a corporation and see because – let's look at it this way. Just because you have an app, a company has an app, and you can access it from any mobile device, doesn't necessarily mean that their website is optimized for web. Mm. So those are some things that we would do as well. And that gets back to the response about the fragmentation in Android, because you do have the different operating systems within Android, and those things can occur. So when you develop, we really have to know what type of devices they're going to be doing it. The challenge for us is we then have to have a lot of those devices, if not all of those devices, in-house to be able to test and do all the QA and so forth. And it can become expensive because we have to have a lot of those devices.
Yeah.
You know, if someone says, well, we want you to do it on this HTC product, and we're like, we don't really want to do that. But no, we'll go out and purchase that HTC. We'll do a jailbreak, we'll tear the whole thing apart, we'll put the app on there and so forth, and that's how we ensure that all the testing is done correctly. But you're right. You talk about disruptive. That is a potential disruptive business aspect of the BYOD, and you'll hear and your listeners will hear about this a lot more in the coming months because more and more corporations are being affected by BYOD the larger they are.
Well, it is such a big change because I remember back in right around 2000, I've used Mac throughout, And I've never left Mac. I used it when I was in grad school doing desktop publishing. Was had an assistantship doing that, and I never dropped it. But I can remember I worked from home a good bit. I was in sales, and I had my Mac that I wanted to use when I worked from home. And calling the IT department and getting them to support me, you know, they all but accused me of being a hacker because I could figure out how to make it communicate with certain systems. And it's amazing that it's changed that much.
It has. And another thing that I just saw recently, which talked to your point, Dana, is that you've got different devices and all of them are kind of behaving differently and all that. Asus just came out with a very neat product, which I thought was like, it's kind of like an iPad, right? But what it does is, so at the back, there's a slot for a phone. So when you want to use your phone, you got your phone. When you want to take it and use a pad, you just slide that into the back of the pad. And
that.
Now all of a sudden it becomes your, I mean, it's got the same, everything, your UI and everything, and all the features and functionality you had in your phone, but now it's adapted for. So which I thought kind of.
That is cool.
It's a pretty nice disruptive technology.
I feel like it's all going to shake out at some point, right? Like this is all going to settle down and in another however many years we'll be like, oh, that was how it was in the beginning. Right. And kids today don't even know what that's like. You know, it's funny because the same one that I was talking about, I should just say what it is, but anyway, not only does it look completely different, the data is actually different. Like I'm looking at data, I'm looking at one thing on my phone and I have to try to figure out which one is right. And which one is trustworthy, the one on my iPad or my phone?
Your computer might have been hacked. I mean, you may be being redirected.
I'm going to tell you what it is because I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's the Weather Channel. So if I check my phone, Weather Channel in the morning before I go out to walk the dog,
sunny.
It's 38 degrees. But if I check my iPad, it's 34 degrees. Uh-huh. And if I go on the computer, it's something else. So like, why don't they have one system that's updating all of those?
It's interesting you bring that up. I was actually with some of those folks just this week. And having some interesting conversations.
Well, tell them Dana said.
You're not responsible for the platform they've got now, obviously.
No.
That would have been awkward.
if you're with the Weather Channel, we would love to do some work with you guys. We've told them many times. But here's what happens is an easy way, if you're a listener out there and you want to find out if a website that you go to is optimized for mobility, an easy way to do it is on your mobile device. Just go to that URL of whatever company you're looking for and then try and go push all the buttons, or as I guess they say in the South, mash all the buttons, and go around and see how easy it is to manipulate around that website and then go to your desktop or your laptop and do it. If it's not the same, that URL, that company's website, may not be optimized for mobility. And there's a number of ways to do that we can be involved as well. But that's probably the quickest and easiest way to find that out.
Sure.
But we're running out of time, so I do want to make sure we get contact information from each of you, and also just a brief description of Ideal Client.
Yeah, sure.
So, Gary, let's go ahead and start with
you.
Well,
because we're a custom development shop, we work with corporations and companies, and we can work with smaller companies as well, as we like to say, if they have budget. But it's sometimes it's easier if you're a larger company. We'll work with those companies, and the only hindrances are imagination and budget. As a custom developer, we can develop and build almost anything because of our experience since 1999 working in the space. There's really not a whole lot that we haven't seen that we can't do. Contact information for us is very simple. Our company is Mercury Development, Mercury like the planet, Mercury Development, and that would just be .com. If you want to ask me any questions, it's very simple. It's just my first name, Gary@mercurydevelopment.com. And just go to our website. All of our further information is right there. Contact information, how to get a hold of me locally is right there.
All right, great.
Our typical client would be somebody who's got people in the field who need to talk to each other and exchange either voice, video, or data. But not only do the people in the field need to stay in touch with each other, but then the people need to stay connected with their headquarters as well. So a three-way communication system, if you look at kind of a triangle between the field people and then them staying in touch with the headquarters, that's what we do as a company, is enable that communications, whether they're transferring voice, video, or data amongst themselves. So to that end, we get involved with the utilities, we get involved with the first responders, we get involved with transportation agencies across the country. I mean, at this point, we've done systems in 46 states across the country. So So people kind of seek us out because of our expertise in making that mobility and making sure that they've got mission-critical needs, because it's not a regular communication system. So there is requirements like security, encryption that have to be built into the system. So that's what we do, is enabling that. And then along with that, we talked about LTE and all that. One of the big things we do is your system is only as good as the foundation on which it's built on. So to that end, to enable those video and high bandwidth applications, you need to have a backbone that supports that, which is called the fiber and the microwave networks and all that. So we build that backbone as well to enable these rich applications to survive. So that's what we do as a company.
You know, let me just leave this last thing with you. Is one of the things that people always think about with mobile apps is they always, because everything's on your phone already, and they think that it's always just from a B to C, so the consumer is always going to use it. In a B2B marketplace, there most of the work we do, believe it or not, is internal apps for corporations. So you'd never know that they have their own app for XYZ. We've done things with, you know, big financial conglomerates that we do things for their fund managers, so only their fund managers can see things. Only HR app, only marketing, only sales. So it's those types of things that corporate environment is now, we're only the tip of the iceberg, and they're starting to realize, wow, so much of this we don't need to have on a software platform, we can do through a mobile app.
Did we get contact information?
Yeah, Prince, how would folks contact you?
Oh, sorry, I forgot about that.
He's got so much business, he doesn't really need
now,
you to call.
Now, our contact information is www.comdex, that's spelled as comdex.com. So comdex.com, and we'd love to kind of talk to anybody who's got any questions.
This has been really informative. And we're like, if you start lumping these shows together, we're going to start to be experts on border control.
Yeah, I never thought it would be an area of expertise for me.
I know. Who knew?
Well, it's been another good show. I wish these guys and their companies had been around in 1993 when the fire engine started circling 42nd and Broadway, but I'm glad they're here now.
Baby steps. Yeah. All right. Well, that is our show for today. Thanks again to our sponsor, Minerva Planning Group, the good folks who provide their clients with financial peace of mind. Check them out online at MinervaPlanningGroup.com. For Micah Porter and myself, this has been Disruptive Business Radio. We'll see you next week.